I'm sorry, guys. I'm out of time. But take care, okay? Live your lives to the fullest. And I'll see you again when you're done. Goodbye. Goku.
Thank you, Dad, for everything.
Rest in peace to the legendary Akira Toriyama.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 461, submission number 966, Iron Chef USA. Iron Chef USA aired on UPN from November 18th to December 26th, 2001, for two episodes.
That's one eighth of a crock block.
I can't believe we're even mentioning the crock block as a unit in a series that had two episodes.
Wouldn't be the first time that we ever talked about a show with two episodes. Isn't that right, Legends of the Superheroes?
No, that wasn't what I was implying. I was just implying the bringing up of a crock block because the general numbers are nowhere near similar. 16 episodes versus two episodes.
Okay, let me figure out the UPN episodes we've covered on this podcast.
One.
So obviously, no, I know it's two because we covered Homeboys in Outer Space.
Oh, two.
And we covered Shasta McNasty. So this is the third entry from UPN. I think the WB has maybe more or the same number as entries from UPN.
Well, just going through my head really fast, we had Pepper Dennis. And we had... what was the one that had Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen?
Two of a Kind, but that was ABC.
Oh, I thought that was on WB. Cleghorn! How can we forget Cleghorn?
Cleghorn, Brotherly Love's second season was on WB.
I think I was thinking of Brotherly Love.
That show that we did during Marvel Month.
Oh, that's right, Raising Dead.
That other show we did during Marvel Month.
The Aquaman pilot?
That other show we did during Marvel Month?
Well, we clearly don't know. Tell us.
It's something with a private school, but I don't remember what the name of the show
is. Opposite Sex? No, that's Fox.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was hoping when you said private school, you're going to say Facts of Life, The Next Generation.
So we've actually had four entries from UPN on this podcast. The original XFL from 2001 had Sunday night games on UPN in 2001.
And also, we are definitely going to cover more WB shows because, geez, that first year or two of WB is just loaded with really bad shows. And then they added Pinky and the Brain, and that sort of gave it a slight level of normalcy.
I really would love to cover Simon Day with Harlan Williams and Jason Bateman.
Life with Roger here with Maurice Godin and Mike O'Malley.
But let's just say this. One day we're going to cover the ultimate UPN show. And that is, of course, Platypus Man with Richard Jenny. Okay, let's get into this intro with the shit.
In my time, I have traveled the globe in search of the finest cuisine mankind has to offer. On this odyssey, I secretly chose four master chefs whose artistic creations surpass those of all others. They are my Iron Chefs, invincible men of culinary skill. Each is an expert in a different style of cooking, and each will take on challengers who dare to enter a kitchen arena. Iron Chef American. Iron Chef French. Iron Chef Italian. and Iron Chef Asian. What inspiration will each challenger bring? How will the Iron Chefs fight back? Through the heat of battle, we will discover the truth and determine whose cuisine will reign supreme. Turn up.
In the last 20 years, the cooking competition has blanketed the TV schedule from MasterChef to Chopped to the Great British Baking Show to Top Chef. But none of them would have ever seen the light of day were it not for a show out of Japan that rose from underground cult classic to worldwide phenomenon. The story, and this is the kayfabe story, I should say. An eccentric billionaire aristocrat lives at a castle where he is searching for the successor to renowned Japanese gourmand Kitaoji Rosanjin. A potter and glazier by trade, one of his actual talents involved teaching food as art. To that end, he has established his own gourmet academy, installing himself as chairman, and has built a first-of-its-kind, state-of-the-art cooking arena that serves as both the centerpiece and the base of operations for his gourmet academy. It was called Kitchen Stadium. He also searched far and wide for an army of chefs whose sole task is to defend the glory of Gourmet Academy and Kitchen Stadium against any chef brave or foolhardy enough to challenge them. They were known, as this show was, by their title. Ryori no Tetsujin, Cooking's Iron Man, or as we would know them in the West, the Iron Chefs. That was the kayfabe story. This is the actual story. Ryori no Tetsujin is a culinary game show created by Fuji TV in 1993, where it ran for 6 years before being canceled due to increased cost and decreased viewership. We all remember the episode where somebody used $1,000 worth of lobster just to capture their essence, threw the lobster away, and flavored asparagus with it, defeating Iron Chef Morimoto. The show itself would return for the occasional one-off special and a reboot season in 2012 under the title Iron Chef, with a new chairman and a new army of Iron Chefs. In 1997, American markets with predominantly Asian populations were able to air the show with English subtitles. Four such markets were, example, Long Beach, San Francisco, Hawaii, and New York City. But it wasn't until 1999 when Food Network bought a dubbed version of the series when it became a surprise hit. Now, you could say it was the over-the-top costumes, the over-the-top dubbing, the over-the-top food, or just the whole spectacle in general.
I gotta say, when I first saw Iron Chef in 1999 on Food Network, I was like, this is the greatest show I've ever seen in my life. This is like dubbed like a Godzilla movie, and it has all this outrageous food, and you have this chairman guy who's taking a big bite out of the pepper. I'm like, this is so awesome. It's like, where has this show been all my life?
And I agree about that. That was 10 p.m. on Saturdays on Food Network, and we as a family used to watch that. Not as religiously as Chico watches it, but oh my gosh, that was amazing. And also, included in the dubbing, just the way that they treated every young female panelist as kind of ditzy and, you know, just the kind of stereotypical Japanese coy female, if you will. Kind of like what they did on Spring of Trivia, former entry Spring of Trivia, I should say.
I was thinking more along the lines of the 4th Street Hottie on Match Game. You know, the 4th Street Hottie.
Yeah, I get it. I've just never seen that fourth position person play up like the really ditzy role and anything like that. But I get what you're saying.
What about the default bimbo of the week on Match Team High? Who swears at her?
No, no, that's later in this show, Greg. Let Chico do his thing.
Oh, okay.
So after 2 years of watching the over-the-top chairman, one Takeshi Kaga, renowned stage actor Takeshi Kaga, and the fierce competition, albeit cheesily dubbed, the call went out to create a new version of the show from both Larry Thompson, not that Larry Thompson, another Larry Thompson, and Lionsgate Films. Fuji TV answered, as did, of all networks, UPN.
Wait, Chico, did you say it was cheesily dubbed?
I said it was cheesily dubbed.
Cheese it up!
Cheese it up!
Cheese it up!
So once Fuji TV, Larry Thompson, and Lionsgate got together with UPN, the task became simple. Find similar to but legally distinct versions of Chairman Kaga, play-by-play announcer Kenji Fukui, color analyst Dr. Yukio Hattori, and floor reporter Shinichiro Ota. And, as a bit of a bonus, instead of three Iron Chefs, America would have four Iron Chefs. The first Iron Chef, Iron Chef French, Jean-François Metenier, the battering bon vivant, the maestro of the bistro. Trained at Trois Gros, France, he was the chef owner of La Cachette in Los Angeles. And I just did the research. It has been closed since 2012. Iron Chef Italian, Alessandro Alex Strada. Still opening restaurants to this day, but the Houdini of the Linguini, the Italian scallion. A fifth-generation restaurateur who grew up in Italy, was named Best Chef of the West by the James Beard Foundation, and was the master chef of Renoir at the Venetian in Las Vegas. He is still opening restaurants to this very day.
Now, wait a second. I got a comment about these nicknames. Did you write these, or are these given by some article? Where are you finding these?
This was from A, the show itself, and B, the press material for the show.
Okay, so clearly the people who were on this show creating these nicknames, apparently one of them went to Coney Island and does the hot dog contest every year, because if you ever watch that, they give every competitor like three or four outlandish nicknames. The Linguini whatever. Oh my gosh.
The third Iron Chef. Iron Chef Asian, Roy Yamaguchi, the feast from the east, the samurai of the stir fry, born in Tokyo, raised in Hawaii, founder of Roy's Restaurants, which has now 30 locations in the United States and Guam, the Tavern by Roy Yamaguchi, and Eating House 1849. And the fourth Iron Chef, Iron Chef American, Todd English, the Texas toaster, the patriot of the pantry, born in Texas, raised in Atlanta, graduated with honors from the Culinary Institute of America, one of people's sexiest people alive from the early 2000s. He used to head the kitchens at Olives and Figs in New York City.
New York City!
He lost control of Olives to the Gerber Group. But he still has Figs. So those are your Iron Chefs. Very, very seasoned professionals. On the other side, you have, on commentary, Anthony Diaz-Blue, one of the top minds of Food and Wine on the West Coast. He was actually on an episode of Mythbusters where he disproved the myth of whether top shelf liquor is better than bar brand liquor. And on play-by-play, we have Michael Berger. Of course, we all remember Michael Berger from his stint hosting Match Game in 1998 and touring productions of other game shows as well, most notably The Price is Right.
Now, hold on a second. Do we have Mike and Maddie on the list?
I don't think we do.
Pretty sure we don't.
Okay, well, might as well.
And as floor reporter, we have Sissy Biggers.
Hold on, time out. I just did a look at the list, and Mike and Maddie's actually lost on the list. It's submission number 261, right between Video Power, previous entry Video Power, and, oh God, Cursed / The Steven Weber Show, which gives me an excuse to mention that 161 episodes ago, I mentioned for the first time ever on this podcast that I love Wings, which has Steven Weber on it.
Please tell me you're going to put that on the schedule soon.
Maybe it'll be my Money in the Bank next year. Who knows?
Sissy Biggers. Martha Sissy Cargill Biggers was host of the first couple of seasons of Ready, Set, Cook on Food Network. Also hosted Biggers and Summers with the one, the only, close personal friend of the podcast, Mark Summers.
Now I have a question. Ready, Set, Cook here in the UK is called Ready, Steady, Cook.
Correct.
Why is it called Ready, Steady, Cook? Is when they say ready, set, go, do they say steady?
Yes.
Instead of set? Really?
They say ready, steady, go.
Oh. Learn something new every day.
And if anybody asks, you heard it here. But we've saved the biggest name for last, I think. What's an American Culinary Academy without a chairman? The chairman of the American Culinary Academy is played by William Shatner.
Now I got a question. How low did the American Culinary Academy have to go to find William Shatner? It was like, we can't get anybody to run this academy. You know what, William Shatner, Captain Kirk, yeah, that's the guy we need to run our cooking academy.
Well, remember, Shatner's been sort of in desperation mode. Maybe not desperation mode, but he'll take any job that pays him for probably like the last 30 years, probably since right around the end of Rescue 911.
That's, of course, how we got him on so many seasons of The Practice and Boston Legal.
But let's not forget, one day we are going to talk about Show Me the Money, and we are going to talk about the Million Dollar Dancers.
And we're going to talk about the story of what happened to the guy who had a bunch of money on the final aired episode, but his game got cut short.
The chairman, and remember, this is before Show Me the Money. This is before The Practice. This is before Boston Legal. This is before Stars on Mars. The chairman, as written in the show, is a mysterious cat. He is the founder of the American Culinary Academy, the creator of Kitchen Arena, and a big-time celebrity. And that's all we know about him. That's it.
So hold on. In the kayfabe of this show, there's no William Shatner.
No. In the kayfabe of this show, there is only the chairman who had the idea to set up Kitchen Arena and the American Culinary Academy 1 year before this show ever aired.
So it's like a wrestler when he goes to like a new company from an old company. He like takes away his previous gimmick. He has a completely new gimmick and everyone pretends they don't know who he is.
Yes. But aside from all of that, there was no real difference structurally from the Japanese series. Each chef and a team of two sous chefs would have 60 minutes to improvise a 5-course meal centered around a theme ingredient. The meal would then be sampled by a panel of celebrity judges who would grade the meal on a 100-point scale, 50 points for taste, 25 points for presentation, and 25 points for originality. The chef with the highest score wins. And like every great game show to come out of Japan, do you know what they win?
Pride.
Sweet nothing. Credibility.
So this is like every modern internship.
I'm sure they're paid for their appearance, though. Because this was Iron Chef, the show needed a kitchen stadium. But because it's UPN and they needed a spectacle that they could sell, they went to the Garden Arena at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Mike, you and I have both been there before.
They got one hell of a buffet. I'm sorry. All I can think of when I hear MGM Grand is food. I'm sure my doctor loves to hear that.
You know what I think of when I think of the MGM Grand? When Herb Abrams had that big show that only like 200 people were at.
Iron Chef USA had a bigger draw than Herb Abrams' house show in Las Vegas. Process that.
But was Iron Chef on Sports Channel America? No.
Oh, I miss Sports Channel America. Before it got all foxified and ballified and bankrupt and stuff.
I miss Sheriff Lobo. So bigger in scale and scope to Kitchen Stadium, this would be known as Kitchen Arena. Each side would have their own identical kitchen. And the Royal Box, of course, would be at the entrance. 200 feet high in the air, with a view of all of the action. And built into the set, instead of off to the side somewhere like the Japanese did, they had the judges' table, where they could watch and silently judge. Two shows were taped, one as a special, the other as a sort of pilot for a potential series. The special, Showdown in Las Vegas, featured Chef Kerry Simon challenging Iron American Todd English. Kerry Simon, billed as the rock and roll chef, given to him by Rolling Stone, the executive and proprietor at his namesake restaurant, Simon, at Palm's Place in Las Vegas. Sadly, he is no longer with us. He died in 2015 at the age of 60. Theme ingredient, Dungeness crab. On the panel, Bruce Valanche, who would be doing Hollywood Squares at the time, Brandi Roderick from Baywatch Hawaii and the reigning Playboy Playmate of the Year.
Woo!
Star of the future entry Young Americans, Mark Famigliati, and star of the Hughleys, Elise Neal. The challenger, Kerry Simon, had six dishes. Melon soup, raw crab with garlic, ginger, and sesame oil, Susie Wong Cabo Wabo martini, crab cakes with wheat lacoche, spicy crab caramel dip, and sugared crab claws with Old Bay sorbet.
Okay, hold on a second. They're getting dishes that are as, well, disgusting sounding as the Japanese version. Crab sorbet?
With Old Bay.
Okay, that's an adorable rhyme. That's absolutely disgusting. I mean, if you look at my cringy face right now, I'm not a fan of seafood, but no, that just, no, so wrong.
The Iron Chef offered six as well. Ceviche of Dungeness crab, 24-karat gold crustacean flan, trio of crab soups, a crab leg brochette with peach glaze, crab in golden delicious pumpkin, and a scallop and crab mousseline, which is finished off with 4 sticks of sparklers. Mike Klaus is not a fan of crab.
I said that already, but again, those are like cringeworthy dishes. No, I am like doing like the Yankees thumbs down guy here, but taking it to a next level, sticking my finger in my mouth because that's how it's coming across to me.
Look, the only crab I'm going to settle for is the crab fries at Chickie and Pete's. Thank you very much.
They have it at Carowinds. I'm going there next weekend to spend the day because your boy has a season pass. That was not a commercial. That was a declaration of love. The winner, by a score of 359 to 334 in favor of Iron Chef Todd English. So that was the first episode. The first episode aired on November 16th, 2001. That was a Friday. And some of the other shows airing on that time slot were Future Entry Thieves, another Future Entry That's Life, a repeat of season 1 of 24, 1 o'clock a.m., an episode of Dateline, an episode of something called Encounters with the Unexplained, and the hour offering of Reba and Raising Dad on the WB. The winner of that hour was obviously Dateline NBC with an 8.4 rating and a 15 share. Iron Chef had a 1.3 rating and a 2 share. In the scope of 2001 television, that's bad. Tell you the truth, people watched the first episode and said, not only is this an insult to Iron Chef, not only is this an insult to the chefs who played on this show, it was an abomination to food fans in general. I have this article from sfgate.com, which said, fans of the original Japanese language cult cooking show Iron Chef, you have been dealt yet another blow. First, there was the taking away of the series, then there was the Food Network version that added hideous dubbing, and now this. The 1-2 punch of William Shatner's making the cheese even stinkier, and UPN, network of teenage boys who love drive-through fast food, dumbing down the fine art of cooking for people who like Funyuns and Spam. These are bleak times. Iron Chef USA Showdown in Las Vegas is the first of 2 specials on UPN. If they are successful, perhaps it will become a series. Not to worry about that. First, the UPN crowd is not exactly a posse of foodies. And second, you have to have at least some working knowledge of Iron Chef to even understand that Shatner is putting his self-caricature to the far edge as some kind of appreciation for Takeshi Kaga, the original Japanese chairman. The critics were not kind. Like, at all. But they had another special in the hopper, and by golly, they were going to air it. The second episode, Holiday Showdown, played like a regular episode. In fact, you wouldn't know it was a Holiday Showdown if there wasn't a couple of obviously placed edits in the beginning, but many shots were reused, like the shot of Shatner entering Kitchen Arena, the shot of Kitchen Arena's intro writ large, and of course the shot of the Iron Chefs being introduced. Harlem Renaissance chef Marcus Samuelson, before he became the Marcus Samuelson that we all know and love today, was the challenger, and he called out Alex Strada in a battle over turkey.
Okay, you know, That makes sense since this is a holiday showdown. I can buy that. Plus, also, turkey's not Dungeness crab, which is seafood and expensive and nasty. But I'm sure there's going to be a dish that's like gizzard pudding or something like that.
Maybe?
No, don't do this maybe crap. You know there's going to be some disgusting dish in this.
Well, let me talk about the judges panel first. We have, from The Sopranos, a guy who was on every game show from 2000 to 2005, inclusive, Steven Shurupa, the Goomba himself. From Martial Law and the then upcoming Mummy prequel, The Scorpion King, Kelly Hu.
Oh, Kelly Hugh. Wow. That's a blast from the past.
Not Kelly Hugh. Kelly Hu. Kelly Hu would have probably broken her kneecap after beating that bastard Charles Logan.
Dear God, Mike. Seriously.
I know it's a stretch.
I'm just thinking she's an admiral in the Orville, which I'm still waiting word on.
I think we've been waiting for word on the Orville for, gosh, like 4 or 5 years at this point.
From Soul Food, Loretta Devine, and the inventor of a century who just happens to have a Showtime rotisserie grill on display for everybody to see, Ron Popeil.
Because you know the turkeys fit in there perfectly. Isn't that actually one of the things that they used to cook on that infomercial for the Showtime rotisserie?
Yep. You just put some oil on it, put some butter under it, you stick it in the spikes, you put the top on, you roll it into the rotisserie, and all together now, you set it.
Set it and forget it. Okay, that wasn't all of us. That was one of us, and Chico did like a half a job there.
Okay. And you said it, and forget it. We'll work on it. Anyway.
It's not as good as the timing on the What a Country theme last week. Oh, by the way, if you didn't hear that last week in either of the episodes, maybe you'll be the close to this episode.
Is this going to be the new tradition we're going to play What a Country?
I don't know.
Until one of you two wants to step up and do the editing? I don't know.
Okay, so the challenger, Marcus Samuelson, he had this thing where he was going to make pasta without pasta. So he created a shrimp ravioli turkey with basil garlic froth. What? That sounds delicious.
No! Shrimp and turkey?
A tuna stuffed turkey with salsify tagliatelle. An espresso smoked turkey with foie gras and sweet potato cappuccino.
Okay, that I might be willing to give a try.
Horseradish baked turkey with truffle potato risotto. Oh god, that sounds delicious. Salmon cannelloni turkey with semi-frozen tomato soup. And a prosciutto-wrapped turkey with pear celery puree and water chestnuts.
That's not too bad either. I might try that.
Alessandro Strada, the Iron Chef, had 5 dishes. A butternut squash soup with curry turkey and pumpkin seed oil. Turkey ravioli with black truffles and spinach parmigiano. Turkey with wild mushroom sausage and balsamico. Turkey saltimbocca bocca with celery root ragu, figs, and almonds. And potato crusted turkey with foie gras, candied turnips, and grapes. The winner, 317.5 to 281.5 in favor of Iron Chef Alex Strada. So the Iron Chefs were 2 for 2.
Question. So were they really expecting this to be more than two episodes? Because otherwise, why do they have four Iron Chefs?
They were expecting this to last more than two episodes. This was, at least this episode, read to me like the pilot for a series. So they put it on Wednesday night, the night after Christmas, on the same time slot, 9 o'clock, opposite the Drew Carey Show. Whose Line Is It Anyway? The Kennedy Center Honors, the Bernie Mac Show, Grounded for Life, The West Wing, and a repeat of Look Who's Talking 2 on the WB.
Now, hold on. Did it beat the rerun of Look Who's Talking 2 on the WB?
No, sir, it did not.
So let me say this. In the late 2001, John Travolta and Christy Alley, bigger ratings draws than William Shatner.
And this was after a rerun of Enterprise.
Damn. So if even Scott Bakula couldn't beat John Travolta and Christy Alley, that's just wow.
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing. That repeat of Enterprise did beat Look Who's Talking 2.
Oh, good. So how much of its lead-in did it lose?
Okay, so Enterprise had a 2.7 rating and a 5 share. Iron Chef had a 1.7 rating and a 3 share. So it lost less than half the audience, maybe a third of its audience. UPN took a look at what they had to work with. They took a look at the ratings and they said, you know what? We're good. It was two episodes and out for Iron Chef USA. So the question, because I know you guys watched it, what happened?
It had none of the charm of the Japanese version.
Even more than that, though, and I think, if you've seen the Iron Chef America Battle of the Masters on Food Network, which served as the pilot for that run, which ran for freaking ever until Bobby Flay decided, I don't want to do this anymore, which is going to be a mini-sode somewhere down the line, I can assure you. But Alton Brown said in setting up the new Kitchen Stadium America, somebody along the line forgot that the chairman wasn't the star. The Iron Chefs weren't the star. To be certain, and he didn't mention him by name, but Michael Berger trying to make a joke every 5 minutes wasn't the star. But the food was the star. We saw a lot of spectacle. We saw a lot of grandiosity. Is that a word? Grandiosity?
It is now.
But the one thing we did not see more of that we should have seen, the food. And you can see an episode of Iron Chef, and they devote like three quarters of the episode to cooking and eating. And that's an interesting thing. I learned when I was doing research for this episode that there is actually a trope that exists. That the Japanese have a fascination with watching people, celebrities especially, eating. How crazy is that? And also, instead of going the full celebrity route, because there were some celebrities who judged Iron Chef America, they decided to pack the judging panel with people who knew what they were talking about. Culinary critics mostly. But yeah, this show, Iron Chef USA on UPN, it's the very essence of being lost in translation. We had all of the pomp and circumstance of the original show, but none of the charm. It's like you never saw Chairman Kaga, but three times per episode. the beginning, where he's introducing the secret ingredients and also eating the yellow bell pepper. The end, where he's announcing the verdict. And the tasting panel when he's at the head of the table. William Shatner was in every damn shot.
Okay, I wonder if that was a decision made by the powers that be, because I'm sure William Shatner does not come cheap, and they want to get every single penny's worth out of him.
That is very plausible, Mike. But also, if you saw, especially in the Las Vegas Showdown episode, you saw Todd English like a kid in a candy store. He was dancing. He was doing the round the back with the salt toss. He was basically having the time of his life. He wasn't just cooking. He was putting on a show. And the audience, which is bigger than the one for Herb Abrams' show, by the way, the audience was big, loud, and eating this all up. You would have never seen that in the Japanese show, except for the New York special.
Oh, I remember the New York special. That was great.
And the King of Iron Chef's series finale tournament.
By the way, I should note, the original Japanese Iron Chef is on Tubi, because as we all know, Tubi lawyer, any old crap. And it's on the FilmRise Television YouTube channel.
Because FilmRise owns the rights to air the original Japanese Iron Chef, which also is why it's on Tubi. This pair of episodes was given a home release. You can buy it on Amazon right now for the low, low price of $15. Or, if you want to watch it on your phone, it is on Prime Video for $5.99 an episode. Or if you can't be bothered with spending money or physical media, it is available for free on YouTube if you know where to look. So what can I say? UPN, Lionsgate, they really wanted to strike while the Iron Chef was hot. But unfortunately, the best they could come up was this thing on TV that was Lost in Translation.
So guys, would you believe I have, for the chat, a special Star Trek-related eBay Prices Right?
Yeah, I'd believe that.
All right, let's play it. So, guys, you know I've been collecting some Star Trek autograph cards of people we've talked about in this pod, right?
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, guess what? I got this. I was searching for this for a long time, but I finally found this, and this is going to be amazing. This is a dual autograph card from Rittenhouse from the Trouble with Tribbles episode of Star Trek, William Shellert and Charlie Brill.
Amazing.
I like that a lot.
I love how you were so speechless, Chico, that I got this card. Of course, I had to get something with Charlie Brill, because of course, Silk Stockings, duh.
Which is also on Tubi, I think.
Yeah, because it's FilmRise, duh. So, Mike, I'm going to start the bidding with you. How much did I pay for this card?
Is it numbered by chance?
No, it is not numbered. It's unnumbered.
Oh, boy. I'll go $29.
$29. What's your bid?
It's unnumbered. I'm going to go $20 even.
I think Chico's going to win, and I'll tell you why. I think, even though it's double signed, which, and it's on card, it doesn't look like a sticker. That's kind of tough to get. I think they don't have the magnitude of commanding a real high price. I mean, I've bought different cards, not Star Trek related, but I've bought similar cards of, let's say, not as high caliber celebrities for like $12 on card. And those are deceased celebrities. So I think Chico's got this one.
You've both overbid.
Are you kidding me?
Wow. After my little soliloquy, you tell me we overbid.
Okay. Under $20. Mike.
I'll go $15.
I'll go $8 because I don't want to go through this whole rigmarole again.
No, he had to have paid at least $15 because that's a bargain under $20.
Okay, guys. For the second consecutive week, Chico's overbid by a penny. $19.99.
Chico, take a penny off, my man. But still a great deal.
I've seen this card go for like $30, $40. Buy it now. So I found this card. Nobody was bidding on it. I kept a watch on it. I'm like, nobody has to bid on this card, right? And I bid on it last minute, and I won. So $20, patience paid off.
That's how you play the game. You got to snipe those items that you want. You got to wait till the last second. The last 5 minutes of an eBay auction as a seller, which I've done a few times, is like the greatest 5 minutes in the world because you just see those numbers keep going up and up and up. But it can be nerve-wracking as a buyer. But I'm glad it worked out in your favor where you had no competition.
Well, you know what has no competition, guys? The Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
It's time for this weekend Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. History.
What do you mean there is no competition to Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour in 1984? I think it was going up against like Tattletales on CBS and General Hospital. Had to be going up against General Hospital on ABC.
Oh, no wonder it only lasted one season.
Oh yeah, the reason, because of General Hospital. Uh huh.
Was Rick Springfield still on General Hospital in 83, 84?
He had to be. 83, 84? Yeah.
This is like the time of Working Class Dog, yeah.
Actually, it looks like, according to IMDb, Rick Springfield was gone in 1983, but then he returned in 2005.
Oh, okay.
But actually, the last episode IMDb has Rick Springfield on in 1983 did go against the second week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. I believe it's the Monday episode because it premiered on Halloween of 1983. So a week later would have been November 7th of 83. And that's the date that IMDb has for this final episode from 1983 that Rick Springfield was on. So yeah, they battled it out in week two. It was Rick Springfield's last appearance versus Gary who got robbed, the guy that looked like Ricky Schroeder, because he would have started the second week. Why do I know this crap?
Yeah, that's right. Gary got robbed in the first episode of week two. I'm still angry about that. Like, almost 5 years later.
So this is beautiful. So Gary got robbed. That episode aired against Rick Springfield's last episode in 1983 until he returned in the 2000s. It's amazing what we discover on this podcast.
Gary should have had like a 12-week run as super champ. I know they had 5-day rules, but they should have had super champs, damn it. Damn you, NBC policy.
But imagine all the contestants we wouldn't have had if Gary was on for 12 weeks.
That's right. We wouldn't have had Katie DeZameda.
Well, no, we would have had her because she was on like week 17 or 16, but we wouldn't have had Magnificent Beard Guy. And I'm sure there's other contestants. Oh, well, maybe if he was on for 12 weeks, he could have had the coma with Tom Poston on the Christmas episode.
Now, hold on. Mike, we have to make a correction to our previous Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour segment from a couple of weeks ago that you did not mention.
This isn't necessarily a correction, but more like an addition that I noticed when I did a little bit of researching earlier this week, I failed to mention, I think this is about 3 weeks ago it would have happened, a super fan of sorts, a guy named Crazy George, who was like Robert Donner's one-man rooting section for an episode. That episode aired like 3 weeks ago. And Crazy George, in case you don't know, is supposedly the inventor of the wave. Even though he wasn't really credited as the inventor of the wave back in 1984. So, yeah, just a little addition that I noticed sort of in retrospect. So this week, we're in week 20. We're actually in episodes 94 to 98, so we're going to hit three digits next week. So that means we're also over the halfway point in the series, because I think this only ran about 39 weeks or so, or maybe even less. So we're halfway done with the series at this point. And among the celebrities this week, we have Tom Bray from Riptide, No Robot. Well, one of our favorites, Tom Bray, and Paula Kelly from Night Court, Kim Morgan Green, Phyllis Diller, Pat Paulson, Anson Williams, Jesse Wells from Oh Madeline, I do believe, since we just talked about James Sloyan last week. And also we have Tim Thomerson. Now, we did have a retired contestant again this week. And actually, last week we had a retired contestant. That following episode, this contestant started her 5-day run. Talking about a young lady named Charlotte Turk. She went undefeated, winning $47,250. She won on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of the previous week. But then on this week, and not just for her, but for everybody on this week, nobody won the big money. So now I wonder if maybe powers that be are cracking down, trying to make it a little more difficult, because we had like $60,000 won the week before, all with John Bauman, and we had like $40,000 a couple of weeks before that. So maybe they're putting the clamps on it. Maybe they're putting the clamps because of the telephone match, because they gave away $25,000 and 5 trips to people to appear on a NBC soap opera. Who knows? But next week, week 21, we have some familiar faces. Familiar faces not just from Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. Faces we've talked about, including one of our favorites, America's Ass in 1984. Who are the other 7 panelists? We'll talk about that next week. Chico, show's yours. Wrap it up.
Show's yours.
Yeah. Oh, I just realized that. I just did my Andy Reid there. I said, show's yours.
Okay. Well, we're just about to close up the kitchen, but remember, you can always go to itwasathingontv.com. You can listen to the 460 episodes that preceded this one. All sorts of great bonuses, including mini-sodes, live shows, extended versions of previous episodes, instant reactions, delayed reactions, the whole works. And remember, we're on all social media, except the obvious one, at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And if you look for us on Mastodon, we are at It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party. Remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. And don't forget, we are also on YouTube. Like the channel, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you can stay up to date on what we have to wrap up our Lost in Translation fortnight and a half. Imagine that you are a present-day Big Shot. You are hit by a car. And all of a sudden, you find yourself trapped in the 70s. The question, are you dead? Are you crazy? Or are you a time traveler? If you are a fan of John Sim, you already know the answer to this question. But if not, you're not going to believe how ABC answered this question. That's coming up next week, right here on It Was a Thing on TV. For Greg, for Mike, I'm Chico, and in the words of William Shatner, enjoy each moment on this sweet green sphere, knowing eating fuels the body, eating well fuels the soul. Never stop looking for the spice of life. Good night.
Wow.
Hey, guys, we're going to do it one more time.
Oh, man, I thought we got it right the first time.
I want to be an American. I want to live here to stay. I want to be an American. I want to say what I got to say. Nah, we're not going to do it again. Instead, here's the real close.
Today in Kitchen Stadium, the Iron Chef takes on an American challenger in the battle of Iron Chef Japanese versus the American Bachelor Chef. The Iron Chef Japanese, Masaharu Korimoto, comes from the Kunimaru school of cooking and is known for his fusion of Western influences and traditional Japanese cuisine. And the American Bachelor Chef, Darren Parsons, worked at a swim club snack bar for 2 summers and once made chili to impress a girl he wanted to have sex with.
What's up, Japan? I'm gonna kick your ass tonight just like we kicked your ass in Vietnam.
Now it is time to reveal today's theme ingredient. Shark heads. The chefs must use shark heads in all of their dishes. Let's meet our celebrity judges. Singer Yoko Akino.
I'm so happy to be here.
Photographer Toshi Tanuga.
Yes, ladies, it's me.
Fortune teller Hirikoru Yakamaze.
Thank you for having me.
And famous murderer Yakimura Saijo.
I can't wait to get my mouth on those shark heads.
Let's see how our chefs are doing. Iron Chef Japanese has just taken the shark head and is rolling them in dried mullet roe.
These shark heads look so shiny and delicious.
What's that he's soaking them in? Seaweed juice?
Yes, it looks like a mixture of seaweed juice, sake, and pureed sparrow eyes.
You don't get food like that in prison. Believe me.
The challenger is doing something very unusual. He has placed a shark head on a round piece of bread.
Hey, Maruto, I found out what's in the challenger's dish.
Yes, what is it?
The bread is called a bagel. The challenger has placed the shark head on the bagel and is covering it with pizza sauce and is crushed it up with Pringles and Velveeta. Huh?
I make these at the Super Bowl every year and I always get laid.
The Iron Chef has begun a second dish. Mr. Morimoto is using a very rare and expensive Japanese ingredient.
Is that what I think it is?
Yes, eel farts.
He's infusing the rice with eel farts. Very impressive.
I can smell them from here. It's making me so hungry, I could murder someone.
Settle down, famous murderer. You can taste the food after this commercial.
Ladies, this is Emeril Lagasse saying breast cancer is a serious problem. Kick it up a notch. Check for lumps. Bam!
Iron Chef, do you feel confident about the dishes you are presenting?
I have done the best I can.
And how about you, American Bachelor Chef? Are you feeling confident?
Dude, I have no idea what you're saying right now, but your face is cracking me up.
The Iron Chef has prepared 3 dishes. Shark head and seaweed and sparrow eyes, a boiled shark head, and shark head rice with eel farts.
I like the seaweed juice, but I thought the eel farts were a little salty.
I agree, but I think the boiled shark head is divine. I can't stop eating it.
The challenger also presented 3 dishes. Shark head nachos, mini shark head pizzas, and Pillsbury biscuits with shark head.
I am a fortune teller, and I predict these biscuits will go in my belly.
This pizza is so enticing and aggressive. It reminds me of my hit song, Blue Jeans on Fire. Blue jeans on fire.
Chevrolet Elvis, blue jeans on fire, New York, let's go!
I thought the shark head nachos were delightful. It made me feel American, like I was a man with blue eyes kissing a girl with a big ass.
And the winner is... American Bachelor Chef!
USA! USA!
All right, join us next time on Iron Chef, when the theme ingredient will be fish tumors. Good day.